India is one of the largest quote-unquote exporter of nurses globally. And this has resulted in a huge deficit of such skill sets in our own country. And there are nurses still waiting with their bags packed, waiting for an opportunity to go. It's not something that's going to stop. And it's just a matter of time, Donna, before it reaches the non-medical segment.
Welcome to Coming of Age, a podcast that is changing the conversation on aging. I'm your host, Donna Duncan, CEO of the Ontario Long-Term Care Association. This season, season four of Coming of Age, we welcome an exciting roster of guests from around the world, thought leaders who are at the forefront of transforming seniors' living and care and are shaping the future for all of us as we age. This episode was generously sponsored by our sector champion, Plan A, powered by Stastat. In this episode, we are exploring a critical global issue, the increasing and escalating health workforce shortages around the world. In Ontario, Canada alone, we will need tens of thousands more nurses and personal support workers by 2029, just in our long-term care sector. These new human resources are essential to meeting the increased hours of direct care needed to support our residents' more complex care needs and to support residents in new long-term care spaces being built to reduce extensive wait lists. To put this in perspective, these workers will be in addition to the more than 100,000 individuals already working in our long-term care homes. However, as we will discuss in today's episode, virtually every other country in the world is facing the same challenges, and we are all looking to immigration to solve our health workforce pressures. We are all essentially fishing in the same pond for our health workforce. And this is creating very complex issues, whether they're geopolitical issues, ethical issues, immigration issues, and domestic policy issues. There are no simple solutions. In today's episode, I'm joined by two incredible seniors care leaders to talk about how do we navigate the complexity of these issues as we look to a global workforce. Mansoor Dalal is the chairman of Common Age, an association that connects Commonwealth countries on common goals for seniors care. Mansoor founded and leads the Association of Senior Living in India, setting standards and connecting systems of care for seniors across the country. His current work focuses on the global care workforce and creating clear pathways for young people to pursue fulfilling careers in seniors care around the world, while ensuring that countries like India retain a highly trained workforce to care for their own aging population. Robin Stone is the Senior Vice President of Research at Leading Age, an association of over 5,400 nonprofit aging services providers and other mission-driven organizations serving older adults in the United States of America. Robin is co-director of the Leading Age Long-Term Services and Supports, LTSS, Center at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. Robin's widely published work addresses long-term care policy and quality, chronic care for people with disabilities, the aging services workforce, and affordable seniors housing and family caregiving. Together, Mansoor and Robin bring deep expertise and insights as to how countries around the world can navigate the complexity and can collaborate to create opportunities for workers and ensure that we all have the supports we need as we age. In Ontario, Canada, we're talking constantly about the health human resources shortage. It's having a huge impact on the delivery of healthcare services across the entire health system, aged care, and social care continuum. And everyone keeps talking about if only we could bring in and support the immigration of health human resources from other countries to solve our problem. I know from our discussion that this is not as straightforward, and we are all fishing in a very fixed pond for health human resources. Mansoor, I'm wondering if you could talk us through about what's actually happening in India in terms of your aging population and how India is planning to care for its population while at the same time exporting its talent.
Thank you, Donna. In India at the moment, we are about 140 million seniors. And that's 10% of the overall population. And that's expected to double by 2050. And at the moment, we have what is normally called the demographic dividend, demographic bulge. But that's shrinking. Shortly, by 2050, would be 20% of the population would be seniors. And we would be something in the region of 300 million. So almost the population of US of Robin. So these are huge numbers, you know, Donna. And today, when at the demographic bulge that we are in, the median age is 30, and that's why this talk of, as I can see, looking at us for the country to provide the workforce, perhaps. But let me admit that the workforce that we have here ourselves is woefully inadequate. And that is across all levels of care and across all strata of the elder care ecosystem. And across all economic segments.
Well, it's really daunting when you think about those numbers, Mansoor, because we make assumptions about the care for ourselves, and it's really eye-opening when we start to see the facts. Robin, what are you seeing? What are your thoughts as you listen to what Mansoor is talking about? And I know the United States is making the same assumptions we are in Canada about looking elsewhere for a workforce.
I think the global challenge for us is where we are very much strapped with a very large and growing older adult population, and the demographics are not there to support, the dependency ratio is not there to support this older adult population. We have to look globally. And I think of this as a human trade question of, you know, obviously we are trying to develop domestically in the United States, our own workforce. But even if we were able to do that now, we demographically will not have enough people to solve our problem in terms of elder care. And so we have to look elsewhere. And so the question becomes much more dramatic around what is the global nature of the sharing of a workforce. Historically, it's been very ad hoc. Some of it is managed migration. Other is not managed at all. It's very informal, very fluid borders with people going back and forth. It's a mixture of ways in which countries have actually taken or shared workforces across their borders. And I think, as you were saying before, there are ethical and practical and economic implications of that. And I think that's the biggest issue for the global discussion, which is we all are going to need a workforce for an aging population. How do we think of this globally? How do we think about how we distribute human capital ethically, economically, and in a way that helps to support the globe? And that is very tricky, very complex, but it's no longer each country's problem.
Those are such great points in terms of that global situation. But certainly in Canada, across our provinces, we're seeing very aggressive competition. We've certainly heard, you and I were at a conference for Leading Age, where one of the other panelists was talking about Germany investing massive amounts of dollars to educate individuals in the Philippines for nursing and in German, and then supporting them to do a turn of service in Germany, but also to that ethical overlay, allowing for a return of service. In Canada, instead of doing term limited visas, we're actually offering permanent residence. So we're looking to keep them. What else are you seeing? And what are some of those considerations then that we should be looking at?
Right. And they're not the only country that's doing that. I mean, we have individual providers at Leading Age, they have had a huge, very formal recruitment strategy with the Philippines for over 20 years, where they have their own university and are training nurses to actually come back to the United States and work here. For the U.S., part of the issue has to do with both the nature of the agreements between countries. For example, Germany has a very strong agreement with the Philippines. We actually don't have that kind of agreement with countries. We have a very strict immigration policy right now. So even when our providers are recruiting from other countries, it may take years to bring in a couple of nurses. The way in which the relationship is structured, for example, Germany is bringing people in for a short period of time and then they turn around and come back. In the United States, some of our providers who have had relationships, for example, in the Philippines, and now it looks like we're moving into Kenya as well, that relationship is where the individuals end up staying in the U.S., but the remittances, a lot of this money goes back to the Philippines or increasingly to some of the African countries, which actually supports the economy of the countries of origin. I think the most important thing for all of us to understand as providers and as organizations that are working globally is what are the opportunities for this shared economy? What are the challenges? What are the benefits to countries of origin? As Mansoor said, 20% of India is going to be older adults by 2050. That's going to have huge implications, not only for India, but for the rest of the world and for his workforce and for the ways in which the younger population in India both serves domestically as well as working globally. So I think these discussions have to get out of just the bilateral agreements between countries and have us thinking much more globally about it.
Mansoor, what are some of the considerations to take more of a global perspective on this?
India is one of the largest quote-unquote exporter of nurses globally. And this has resulted in a huge deficit of such skill sets in our own country. And there are nurses still waiting with their bags packed, waiting for an opportunity to go. It's not something that's going to stop. And it's just a matter of time, Donna, before it reaches the non-medical segment. But at the same time, you also have to acknowledge this fact, Donna, that there is an aspiration of the youth. And they have career choices. And they would go wherever there are more options available. And it's a very highly competitive world, and which cannot be ignored. The trick, as Robin Nutt said, for both these, let's say, demographies that we have in terms of having a workforce, not having a workforce, but at the same time being considerate to the country that is providing the workforce so that they do not get shortchanged, so to speak, for of their skill sets. I have an idea that perhaps it can work. So the idea I have, Donna, is ELDER, E-L-D-E-R. So it means educate in the country of their origin with common training modules. I'm sure seniors are the same world over, right? So we educate with a common training module and then have specific training modules to the country of, you know, maybe where they are going to. L-Learn, which means practicum in a related or a co-joined community so that they are there for about a year, year and a half, being part of the workforce in that community, learning the practicals of care and being there as a part of the workforce. We go to D, ELDER. Demonstrate. The candidate now has to demonstrate what he or she has learned. And by that, I mean, then gets accredited, certified, assessed, evaluated by the country where the institute has been coaching her and also from where he or she is going to be finally employed. There is no time lapse so that the candidate is there and they go into the work stream immediately. E of ELDER is earn. By this, we are giving the opportunity to the candidate to earn. Because again, as I said earlier, that's the aspiration of the youth. You cannot stop it. They will find ways and means to go about and grow in the opportunities of their choice. So they earn. And then the last of elder R, return. You come there, you work, you earn, you take care of the currency disparity that is there between many countries. You enjoy that. And then you return. You return back to your country of origin. Now that you have served somewhere else, you are more experienced. So when you return, you're coming back with a higher value added to your persona and resume, which allows you to not only give you a pipeline of growth, gives you a line of sight that you might even end up as a CEO of that community for which you previously worked when you left the country. So that's the incentive. So the elder model, if we can try and implement that, it would become just perhaps the beginning point of our, you know, problem, and we may find some solution to it.
I think it's exactly perfect in terms of what we've been talking about for years, and how you operationalize it is part of the challenge, but you at least could start with core competencies and training. So how do we actually develop those competencies, standardize some curriculum, start to think about how we could share that across countries, and then develop these mechanisms that Mansoor was talking about around practicums, real learning tied to earnings that are at least viable, and then have this notion of reciprocity and coming back to be able to begin to build in one's own country. I mean, I think that even to get to the point of having a discussion around that and setting up a framework, trying to get some demonstration projects around that. I mean, to me, that is how we're going to start to solve this, by doing this together. And I think the beauty of organizations like the Global Aging Network is that it's grassroots, because you've got organizations on the ground that actually are doing this. It's not coming out of some governmental entity, but it's actually coming out of people who have real need. And so if we could show that we could make this happen, even on a demonstration basis, we could start to move it.
And I know, Mansoor, you've been doing, through Common Age, a train-the-trainer approach. And so you're already on the ground doing this. One of my questions for each of you, and in last season, I had the privilege of interviewing a number of internationally educated nurses from the Philippines who actually were in Canada. One of the comments each of them made to me was, what was unfamiliar to them was the notion of providing aged care and seniors care, because it wasn't something that culturally they would have done in the Philippines. And we've heard this about India as well. There's a cultural shift where in some of the countries where we're turning to for support, there's not a natural inclination to think that a career in aged care is needed or even a viable career path. And their inclination would be to go to a hospital.
From a frontline perspective, I think we have an incredible opportunity to train and educate in a standardized way across countries with the cultural competence that Mansoor was talking about. Now, that's what Germany has done. Germany has identified and articulated these frontline jobs as careers. And that's why training in other countries, because they have a real pathway to coming to Germany and actually having a career. I mean, they've been very, very good about this. And I think we need to be much more formal around developing this frontline workforce and doing it together across country.
It's the same in India too, Donna, because just like Philippine, unless you show that this is an alternative career, and a career that has a pathway going ahead, you know, which can culminate perhaps not only you being a nurse, but you being at a higher managerial level someday, is that's the only way that we can do it.
To your point and building on your elder framework. You know, and you've touched on this a bit, Mansoor, the recruitment just isn't about the hiring. It is about, to your point, Mansoor, as well, the other supports. And I am amazed every time I keep learning about the settlement services, these wraparound services to support the navigation through the immigration process, the support in providing support in housing, meeting people at the airport, providing transportation, whether it's a car or a bicycle, housing, family supports. You know, our colleagues in the United Kingdom and the European Union talk about key worker housing that is being built out. And in Canada, certainly in Ontario, a lot of our long-term care homes, as they build new long-term care homes and redevelop, they're also building housing adjacent to those new long-term care homes, specifically for the purposes of accommodating an internationally educated workforce, even if it's transition housing. And I don't think we fully appreciate just how comprehensive these supports need to be.
I mean, it's actually essential for frontline folks, particularly even if they're not from another country, because where they, if you can't afford to live in the community that you're working and you have to drive 3 hours to get to a place of work, that's not doable. So we've had a serious recognition here that affordable housing for both our domestic workforce as well as our foreign-born workforce is essential. The other piece of this workforce potential is refugee resettlement. And we have pockets of that, as you do in Canada and many other countries around the world, where we haven't been intentional enough about how do we talk about our sector as a wonderful place to work, and then how do we work with resettlement agencies to actually train refugees to come into our sector. But what is required around all the wraparound services, really, it's supporting the whole family, not just the individuals. So, you know, I think, again, as we talk about this globally, we have all these different opportunities to think about how we create these careers that are going to be economically viable for people. And can we do this together? To me, that's the glue is going to be the global nature of this, that we're not just doing it by ourselves.
It cannot be. It has to be global, Robin, because the very nature of our conversation is that how do we do this, mutual beneficially for all countries. And I take your point very clearly about, refugees. And I feel that there would be perhaps multi-layers of, workforce that we'll have to deal with. A refugee category of workforce would be a different way of handling it, because it then becomes a complete family setup that we need to ingrain into that new community with that cultural affinity and ethnicity and so on and so forth, as against what they have been used to perhaps in their base country from where they came from. And another layer could be a workforce from countries who are not refugees, but who have come as a career. And they may not be with families. And that is the very nature of what we want to do is, so if you bring families over, then there is no incentive for them to go back. And if they don't go back, then the country that has sent them is now going to be deficit, which will defeat the purpose of our being mutually beneficial to each other. I don't want to sound, but a Germany doing to a Philippines what he's doing is absolutely great for Germany. Perfect. It couldn't have done better. It has gone there to Philippines, set up the institute, taught them German so they're familiar with the language, brought them across, given them a great life. Now, if that same thing could have been done, by which Germany could have, brought them back perhaps somehow, it would have been more long-term.
I would say one thing we need to be honest about this as we think about this global issue is that the economy of the Philippines in many ways is based on remittances. So the reason why the government likes to have these agreements is that it may not bring back the human resource, but a lot of money goes back to the Philippines, which would not have been there had these folks not gone to another country. So I think this is not true across all the countries, but I think we have to at least build in this, the notion of how much remittances are supporting certain countries, and how would we think about organizing this differently so that you would still have that economic benefit, but it would be done more mutually beneficially. And I think that's part of the discussion that we have to have. Maybe it's great that money's going back to the Philippines to these families, but they've lost a workforce and they've also lost their family members. I mean, so it's not just the economic piece of this, it's also the emotional and family piece. And that's why I think we have to be really clear about how we discuss all of these things and how we organize it differently so there's a lot more mutual benefit.
Absolutely. What we are trying to do is how we can strike a balance by having remittance come in when they are there and then giving them an opportunity to look, you can go back to your country. Here is a community which will value you because now you have an international experience and there is a career path for you. So today, because there is no such opportunity created back in that origin country, is what we are facing.
Well, I think, Mansoor, for our listeners, all of us had the privilege of being at the Global Aging Network conference in Glasgow last fall. And we had a great workforce summit. And Mansoor, you presented that one of the considerations is, in so many cases, a lot of these individuals who leave the country of origin to go and work in another country go, accumulate wealth, and then they're going to return when they're older. So they are bringing wealth back into the country even at that point, but yet the infrastructure is not going to be there to care for them when they return as aging adults. Was something I'd never thought of.
Yeah, well, that's the reality. And that's what, you know, we are trying to go ahead of, perhaps, you know, by saying that, look, since there is an aging population that's happening, I'm just talking of India at the moment, and it's similar for many other countries. I'm sure it's for same for Sri Lanka, it's maybe same for Philippines and other countries. I know for many of the South African African countries too, is that a population that is aging is also creating a senior care industry. And the senior care industry that is growing would at some point in time come to the same problem that at this point you are perhaps facing. And that's exactly where we are thinking ahead of.
Well, on that note, I'm going to loop back to, again, one of our earlier episodes to talk about some of the work that's happening in the United States around integrated planning and master planning for aging. And Mansoor, to your point, and I know you're an architect, planning for aged care is not just about a long-term care home or a nurse or a frontline care worker. It is about settlement services. It's about transportation. It's about housing. It's about family supports. It's about education and training and credentialing. Whereas the lens of so many is not about some of those the complex issues. How do we till the soil and help foster that greater recognition that it's a collective responsibility that transcends, that crosses sectors, crosses levels of government, and really is being able to bring that global perspective as we think about this very fluid workforce?
Absolutely. I'm really heartened that we are talking. We just need to bring it together and you know, create a, some sort of a task force, perhaps. I'm not going to use the white paper name again, Donna, but I've come up with some sort of a roadmap of how
I think a roadmap and more of an action plan.
Right.
You know, there's been many white papers written on the problem, but the solutions are what is needed. And the value of our network is that we are truly global, and we have the opportunity to work collaboratively to actually see whether we could make some of these things happen, where we don't have the constraints of being fed. So the whole concept of a master plan on aging is to think about this as a community. I've always said to people who think that an elder care home is a building, it's part of a community. Not only is it a resource for the people who are living there, but it's an employer for a lot of people. I think that's the opportunity that we have, which I think is incredibly exciting. And the notion, Mansoor, that you're trying to mitigate problems that other countries have already gotten to is something that is often a problem. We don't seem to deal, at least the U.S., we're a perfect example of not dealing with anything until it's right flat in your face. So I love the notion of trying to sort of figure this out before you hit some of those same road bumps.
Wow. What a great note to end on, a call to action, driving change from the outside, but together, and a real focus on the possibilities of what we can do together.
Thank you for listening to Coming of Age, the podcast that is changing the conversation on seniors' care and aging. We hope this episode brings a new perspective and inspires you to continue the conversation with your colleagues, friends, and family. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast so that more listeners will join our community of changemakers in seniors care. Until next time, I'm your host, Donna Duncan. Keep well.
This episode was generously sponsored by our sector champion, Plan A, powered by Staffstat. Plan A, powered by Staffstat, is the only staffing strategy in Canada dedicated to senior care. It combines people and culture with innovation to help senior care homes optimize their staffing. Learn more about their mission to ensure that senior care organizations across Canada have access to a strategy that supports their frontline employees while keeping residents safe and well cared for. Visit www.jointheateam.com.